Thank you all for that warm welcome. President Dockery, members of the Board of Trustees, faculty and alumni of Union University, distinguished guests, parents, family, friends, and most of all, the class of 2004. It's an honor to be part of your commencement ceremony today, and I bring you greetings from my boss, President George W. Bush. I also bring you greetings from two of your alumni, Andrea McDaniel and Joshua Trent. They might be the first alumni to have worked in the White House from Union University, but I guarantee you that they won't be the last. Our country is benefiting from the world-class education that the students are getting here at Union University. And on behalf of this country and this president, we thank you. I also wanted to commend all the men and women who have devoted their professional lives to this institution. Thank you for investing your lives to shape the minds and the talents of this class. To the parents, thank you for your hard work, your sacrifice, your support, and your love for your sons and daughters. At this moment, you must be very proud, happy, and broke. Into the class of 2004, today marks the culmination of many years of determination and hard work. One too many bagels at Bubba's, doing your own laundry, circling this campus for a parking spot. Congratulations, you've made it, and we're all very proud of you. It's the custom for graduation speakers to draw on their experience and share some of the lessons learned along the way. I've only been out of college for 25 years, and coincidentally, I've been a Christian for 25 years. As I reflect back on that, I realize that there are fewer days ahead of me than there are behind. So I really appreciate this opportunity to reflect on God's hand in my life. So as you begin this new chapter in your Christian life, let me humbly offer a few lessons that the Lord has taught me. The first lesson I want to share with you is this: all Christians, without exception, are called to full-time Christian ministry. 25 years ago, I had become a Christian. I'd become a follower of Jesus Christ the second semester of my senior year in college. My quandary was this after I became a Christian: how would my faith would affect what I was going to do for the rest of my life? I went to my Christian friends, and they advised me that if I really wanted to make an impact for the kingdom, that I should go into full-time Christian ministry. And being new to the faith, I asked them what they meant. And they said that I should go get a seminary degree and then go into the pastorate or a parachurch ministry or the mission field. I asked them what to do if I sensed that I was being called to the secular workplace. And they said that I would not nearly have as much impact as being in full-time Christian ministry. However, I could redeem my work by sharing the gospel with my workmates, by really getting involved with my church, and tithing those to support those in full-time Christian ministry. And because it can be tough in some professions to be a Christian, they encouraged me to pursue healthcare, education, or social services and avoid business, politics, and art. Well, I'm here to tell you that after 25 years of studying the scriptures, I believe that the Bible informs us that it's the calling of pastors to equip you, you the ministers, to do the ministry. That means that if it's the pastor's job, their full-time Christian ministry is equipping you to do your full-time Christian ministry. Well, what is that? God has since taught me that full-time Christian ministry is not what we do, but why we do it. Right now, you may sense a calling to be a teacher, or a nurse, or a designer, or someone in business, or a pastor, a professor, a mother. That calling becomes ministry at the point that you become obedient to that calling and do it to the glory of God. Is the quality of your work product glorifying to God? Do you treat customers fairly? Are the relationships that you have with your fellow workers glorifying to God? Are you a beacon of light, hope, and peace in your workplace? If so, then my brothers and sisters, you are in full-time Christian ministry. The second lesson I want to share with you follows the first. I am convinced that Christians are in the obedience business and not the success business. As a sinful human being, I tend to measure my worth by comparing myself to others. What school did you go to? How many degrees do you have? How much money do you make? How many people do you manage? What church do you go to? What neighborhood do you live in? Where do your kids go to school? And in Washington, there's always somebody that's better than me. As I've grown in my faith, I've become more interested in living a life that is good than living the good life. There is nothing wrong with a great job, with a nice car, with a fine home, with a private school. My question to you is, do you expect all these pleasant things as a result of obedience to God? Because being obedient does not guarantee success. This is true in Scripture, and it is true in a Christian's life. Billy Graham has tens of thousands of people who attend each crusade. While the Apostle Paul was stoned and thrown out of cities when he tried to evangelize. Compared to Billy Graham, you could probably argue that the Apostle Paul was a failure as an evangelist. But in God's eyes, they were both successes because both were obedient to God regardless of the outcome. Failure and success would either improve or destroy your character, depending on how you handle it. By God's grace, He wants to do things through you. But more importantly, God wants to do things to you. So God bestows success or failure for many reasons, and I believe one of the most important of those reasons is to shape our character in preparation for heaven. I have now come to the conclusion, after 25 years of being a believer, that God is not impressed with what my resume looks like. He is not impressed with how big my bank account is, that success is not a measure of my faith. But you know what is? Character is a measure of one's faith. What kind of person do you want to be? I challenge you today to make a to-be list before you make your to-do list. For me, Ed Moy, I want to be a more loving person. I want to grow more joyful as I go older. I want to be peaceful. I want to be patient. I want to be more kind. I want to be faithful. I want to be gentle. I want to be self-controlled. I want to be generous. I want to be gracious. I want to be compassionate. I want to be sacrificial, and I want to be wise. The third lesson builds on the other two. I'd like you all to consider being a thermostat and not a thermometer. I'm not implying that you're all hardware stores out there. What do I mean by that? A thermometer reflects the temperature of a room. A thermostat changes the temperature of the room. My early years as a Christian was marked by being on fire for the Lord. My friends tended to be others who shared my zeal. We would dream about how God might use us to change the world. But something happened over the years. Zeal was replaced by the reality of paying off school loans, of mortgage payments, of private school tuition. enthusiasm was replaced by the fatigue of raising children, caring for ailing parents, and working long hours. And worse yet, some of my friends succumbed to adultery, divorce, alcoholism, drug abuse, and pornography. In short, there is tremendous pressure for us to default to the culture around us. And as a result, the lives of many Christians appear no different than those of non-believers. So how do you change the temperature of the culture around you? Let me suggest two ways. One way is to be thoughtful on how you live. When you choose your job, don't automatically default to the highest pay in the nicest city, but choose the best job where you can fulfill His calling for you to be in full-time Christian ministry. When you choose a home, don't automatically default to the safest suburb of the neighborhood, but choose a place where God can do His work through you and to you. When you choose a car, don't buy the best that you can afford, but choose a car that exhibits godly stewardship of the financial resources that God has blessed you with. In other words, do not spiritually sleepwalk your way through this life. Another way to be a thermostat is to be a change agent. As I read the news, I wonder whether a vocal Christian working in accounting at Enron might have prevented the loss of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of pension fund losses. I wonder what entertainment might look like if Christians, by their professional excellence, became Hollywood executives with the authority to greenlight movie ideas. I wonder if politics can serve the public good instead of partisan self-interest if more Christians were involved. I have the privilege of serving President Bush, himself a believer, and I'm in a White House that is open to faith. Together with many of my Christian brothers and sisters throughout this administration, we are working each day, getting together on a regular basis, and struggling with what it means to be a Christian in public service. The fourth and final lesson I want to share with you is this. Live each day to the fullest. I remember it well. It was Christmas Eve in 1997. I took a sip of soup, and the next thing I knew, I was on the floor of my kitchen, grasping my head, and I was writhing in pain. It felt like there was a lightning bolt that went off in my head, and it left behind this burning pain in my ear that felt it was on fire. And then it happened again and again, and every time I swallowed. The doctors diagnosed it as a rare and painfully intense and incurable nerve illness. I had two choices. Option one was to live with it, but the prognosis was getting through a workday would be virtually impossible, and 80% of the patients that chose this option eventually committed suicide because they couldn't stand the pain. Option number two was brain surgery. The prognosis was that there was a significant risk of dying in surgery and even a greater risk of brain damage or losing my voice. My wife, Karen, and I chose option one for 2.5 years. And through that, we endured unemployment, the loss of all our savings, going into significant debt to pay the bills, having our Christian friends ignore us, and worse yet, some took advantage of us. And with no earthly choices left, we chose option number two. Well, I'm here to tell you that a funny thing happens when you know you have an imminent chance of dying. Suddenly, every day is a day of grace, and it's not to be wasted. To love and to be loved mattered more to me than any title, than any salary, or any possession that I had. The truth is, we are all going to die. But for most, we just don't know when. So we get on with the business of life thinking that we have 80 or 90 or 100 years to live it. We muddle along until our kids get out of college before rededicating our lives to serve God. Well, through that pain, God blessed me. He showed me my own mortality. And by his grace, I stand before you today. Our days are numbered. Live each day to the fullest. Don't wait to serve God tomorrow, because tomorrow may never come. Serve him today with all your strength, with all your soul, with all your mind. For all of you, this day is an important milestone, a marker of gifts well used, aspirations fulfilled, of hard work rewarded. I share your family and friends' excitement about the journey ahead of you. I hope and pray that you'll be in full-time Christian ministry in whatever vocation God calls you to, that you strive for obedience and not success, that you become a thermostat and not a thermometer, and that you live each day to the fullest. It's been my privilege to share this day with you and your families. Once again, congratulations to the class of 2004. God bless you.